This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Houston is a classic example of a city that has failed to adopt this perspective that cycling can be a meaningful way for people to move about the city and have, bring lots of benefits to its citizens.
Do you ever wonder why so many people ride bikes in a place like the Netherlands, while so few do in Texas? Both places are flat with temperate weather, and physicists call the bicycle the most efficient means for human transportation yet invented. So why do residents in one location ride bicycles at so much lower a rate? Well, the answer, it turns out, is complicated and involves political, cultural, and practical factors. This week on Sea Change Radio, we hear from Michael Payne, a wind energy executive turned bicycle advocate. He talks about the efforts his nonprofit, Bike Houston, is undertaking to change policy, attitudes, and habits in the nation's fourth largest city. While it's unlikely this work will transform Houston into a southwestern Amsterdam anytime soon, the lessons from the work of Payne and his colleagues may well inspire similar bicycle revolutions in other cities. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by my good friend and a frequent guest of Sea Change Radio. He is now the executive director of Bike Houston, Michael Payne. Michael, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. It's great to be back.
So we've always had you on to discuss wind power, and you're a longtime wind energy executive. And before we dive into what the efforts specifically of Bike Houston are and what your organization's mission is, how long were you in Amsterdam? 6 or 7 years, something like that?
I lived for 3 years in Amsterdam, and I lived another 6 years in The Hague, which is about 35 miles south of Amsterdam.
So 9 years in the Netherlands. What are some of the starkest contrasts in how people approach biking in the Netherlands versus Houston?
Well, that's a great question, Alex. And you know, I think the thing that really distinguishes the Netherlands from other places around the world is their commitment to cycling. And they are a society which, you know, going back about 30 or 40 years, they were not cycling. They were
skating.
They were ice skating. They loved their skating, but they were adopting the automobile just like the rest of the world was. And they were experiencing the challenges of automobiles in terms of congestion, in terms of safety issues and fatalities. And they made a strategic decision to promote cycling. And their climate is not the most forgiving place to do that, but they made the investments in the infrastructure and separated bikeways. They made the investments in terms of their city planning and thinking about the way to lay out transportation networks. And they stuck with it over time. And, you know, there was opposition along the way. If you study the history of cycling in the Netherlands, there was a lot of opposition at times, and yet they persisted. And today, of course, they are hailed as genius for what they've created there.
We actually did a recent profile on the Copenhagen wheel, which is that power-assisted wheel that was developed by MIT, but it was in collaboration with the municipality of Copenhagen, and Denmark is similar, I assume, to the Netherlands in its proactive approach to trying to get people out of their cars and onto bikes.
That's correct, yeah, and electric-assist cycling is growing rapidly in the Netherlands as well, and then the reason is that you have an aging population. So the electric assist technology allows people to cycle well into their golden years. And there's a 150-mile ride there called the Elfstedentocht, which has been going on for 102 years now, which has participants who've done it for, you know, 50 years in a row, which is just, you know, it's amazing.
I know here in San Francisco, we think, well, Amsterdam, they must be, it must be a great city to cycle. It's flat. Of course, everyone's going to ride bikes. But there are a lot of flat cities in America that really don't have any kind of adoption rates, even approaching San Francisco, a very hilly place.
Right. No, that's correct. I mean, unfortunately, Houston is a classic example of a city that has failed to adopt this perspective that cycling can be a meaningful way for people to move about the city and have bring lots of benefits to its citizens. And we have lots of space. We have 10 months of delightful weather every year, and it's flat as a pancake here. So, you know, we believe the potential for Houston to be one of the greatest cycling cities in the country is there. It just requires some vision and implementation.
So speaking of vision, what is the vision of Bike Houston? What is your organization's mission right now?
Yeah, so Bike Houston is it's a nonprofit organization, a typical 501c3 structure. It has a mission of promoting safe cycling and improving the quality of life in Houston. So we have a lot of work to do. Houston is not a leader in this area. It has been a follower for quite some time, and our objective really is to identify the cyclists that are here, and there are a lot of cyclists in Houston. We have 6.2 million people in the greater metropolitan area. It's the fourth largest city in the United States, and our goal is to find those cyclists, unite them, convert them into members and volunteers, and really work with the city and the city council members to share the benefits of cycling. And there are many benefits to all citizens, non-cyclists and cyclists alike.
Are more of your efforts focused on, are the barriers to getting mass adoption more safety oriented, or is it more just convenience?
That's a great question. So really, what you see around the country is that cities which don't have, where the cyclists are not organized, fail to make progress. And so cyclists by nature are a fragmented group. We believe there are over a million bicycles in Houston, and the largest groups out there are, you know, in the thousands, maybe 10,000 followers on Facebook or what have you, and a few thousand riders on a ride. So the challenge for Bike Houston and for the city of Houston is to build a bicycle advocacy organization that is a going concern, that has adequate cash flows and staff who can participate in the dialogue around what the future of Houston will look like over time. This is not a decision. This is a journey that we're going on. So we need to build a membership base from a cash flow perspective and from a volunteer perspective. We need to be, you know, raising money through grants, special events, and corporate sponsors as well. And by doing that, we can build a staff, and we can participate in the dialogue and the planning for the city and make an impact on the thought process and the decisions that are being made by our elected leaders.
I guess the term conservative generally means that you want things not to change that much. And the status quo is that we're going to continue being a car-focused country. But fiscally, it just makes sense to put more effort into biking and walking, doesn't it?
We believe it does, and we believe that the statistics are there, and more cities are recognizing the economic benefits of an improved cycling environment and experience for their people. And it really comes on two levels from our perspective. One is on a local level. When people are on their bicycles, they are proven to stop and spend more money at the local shops and restaurants that they're going by. So in the real estate world, you used to hear it's location, it's location, it's location. Well, what people are realizing is that it's really about being accessible. And being accessible is to people that are on their bicycles, people stop and spend money in those places. You know, I meet people all the time who say, I picked my house based on my bike accessibility. The second issue really relates to the desirability of the city and the related health costs. So there's two parts to that. The first part is cities which create a built environment which encourages people to get out and move around, you know, you find that they have lower rates of obesity, lower healthcare costs in general associated with that lifestyle. And it's also true that cities that offer a nice environment to go out and move around in and to be outdoors have more success in recruiting the best and the brightest workers to their organizations, and also, quite frankly, attracting companies to come and locate in their cities. So you know, when Google goes to choose a regional office in Texas and they look at what sort of infrastructure is available to their employees. This is a key issue, and as cities compete to attract companies and to attract the creative class who have the option or the privilege to live in whatever city they want to live in around the world, not just within our country, having a built environment, which means bike lanes and sidewalks and trees, goes a long way towards convincing people that not only should they take that job because of the opportunity there, but that they'll also be happy on the weekends and in the evenings.
I got a gal in Houston, a gal in Houston, and a gal in San Antonio. I got a gal down in Houston and a gal in San Antonio. I got a Dallas gal, make a good man leave his home. But I'm going to Cowtown, I'm going to Cowtown to get my ham bone boiled. But I'm going down to Cowtown to get my ham bone boiled. Cause them New York women done let my ham bone spoil.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the executive director of Bike Houston, Michael Payne. So, Michael, as somebody who's not only lived in the Netherlands, but in the Seattle area, which is a smaller city than Houston, but one that has, I assume, adopted cycling in mass. Can you give us a perspective of where Houston stacks up against similar large metropolitan areas in terms of bicycling adoption rates?
Right. So unfortunately, you know, I guess the good news and bad news for me is that there's one way to go in terms of making improvement. And that's a big part of the reason why I took this job in January of this year. But Houston has one of the least developed bicycle advocacy organizations. It has one of the least developed networks of cycling infrastructure in the city. And it's a function of cyclists getting united and asking for what they want to a large degree. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. But Seattle, as a contrast point, a city less than half our size, has a full-time paid staff of 35 people working for fighting for cyclist rights and working with the city to improve the built environment, to work on education-related issues and enforcement of the laws which protect cyclists. They've got a budget of $3.5 million a year. I mean, if you applied that sort of penetration, and I think they have 17,000 paying members, helping drive their organization. If you applied that to Houston, we would have, a paid staff of 70 people working on cycling, and that would be, just a phenomenal accomplishment. Obviously, we're a long way from achieving that sort of organization, but it puts in perspective a city with a less favorable climate, with a less favorable topography, has been able to accomplish a great deal thanks to the hard work of a lot of people getting together and supporting the cause.
So, Michael, with a background in the wind energy sector, you're aware of the great strides that have happened in the clean energy efforts in Texas. A lot of it is because of topography, but there's been a lot of infrastructure put in place to get wind energy to Texas residents. But then we still see this lag when you look at the cycling. Is it more attitude of the people, or do you think it's more urban planning and infrastructure? I'm looking at this level, biking and walking levels by city, and Houston, El Paso, San Antonio, Dallas, and Fort Worth are just in the last quartile of everything. Houston's actually the best of the Texas cities. Fort Worth is 51 out of 51 on this list.
Right. No, it is. It's an area where Houston and Texas have a lot of room for improvement, and to put it politely. So my personal perspective is that Houston, because of the scale of the cities and the scale of the state, people have gotten used to driving their cars, and the planners have designed a road structure for motorists. It has not been designed for pedestrians or cyclists, and they have failed to see how planning for people to have a built-in joint environment they enjoy being out in would have longer-term ramifications on society. So as a result of designing for cars, people don't feel comfortable cycling or walking around their city. And what are the implications? Well, we are now facing obesity and just at sort of epidemic rate. So 64% of our society is either overweight or obese. 30% is suffering from high blood pressure. 9% are suffering from type 2 diabetes in the Houston area. And, you know, the cost of that on individuals in terms of shorter lifespans and lower quality of life, not to mention the economic costs, are staggering. And you know, you go and you speak with the city council and the mayor's office, and the answer in the past was, well, you know, we can't afford to do bike lanes. We can't afford to build those. When the reality is, we can't afford not to. And that with healthcare costs rising at, you know, 8 or 9 or 10% a year, and people literally filling our emergency rooms with these sort of behavioral driven conditions, we've got to invest money in creating a built environment that people enjoy going out and walking around in. And the reality is that will create economic dividends for our society and our city. So if you think about the city's role, I mean, the city wants to attract and retain the best and brightest companies and workers. And in order to do that, you have to have a place where they want to work and grow companies and raise their families and be healthy. I mean, that's what the educated, wealth-generating class wants to do. And, you know, it makes it difficult to recruit. We're moving away from a resource-driven world into a knowledge-driven world, and it makes it hard to recruit those knowledge experts to your city if you don't have a nice environment to offer them. So I think more and more cities are recognizing that by building separated bike lanes that take you to the park or that take you to the museum and allow you to move around in other ways than getting in your car, you're creating a fun place to live and a nice, healthy place to live. And that's something that we missed through the last 30 years of planning, but people are now talking about more.
And I should correct myself here. I disparage the entire state of Texas, but Austin is right in the middle of the pack at 27th, still not even in the top half, but Austin seems to be the leading city of biking and walking in Texas, unsurprisingly. But you contrast that with a city that's similarly spread out like Atlanta or even Denver, and they have much higher rates of adoption. What are some of the efforts that are underway in those cities? Is it being able to interface better with mass transit options?
I think even just having mass transit, for example, in the case of Atlanta, you know, where the MARTA was built, you know, 25 years ago, Houston is sort of trailing about literally 25 years behind Atlanta and other cities that have introduced their own light rail systems. So we haven't even introduced our T yet in our light rail system. So we're just rolling that out now.
So Houston has no mass transit options other than buses?
We have one north-south line right now, which we're in the process of expanding. But, you know, really, quite frankly, we're quite far behind given the size of our city.
You're not allowed to ride your bike on the freeway, but then where are you supposed to go if everything is built for freeway use?
Right. You know, the city really has to plan for safe cycling. So, you know, one of the things that Bike Houston did at the beginning of this year was we launched a Goal Zero Fatalities campaign, which was our effort to communicate with our elected officials, communicate with motorists, and communicate with cyclists, key steps they could take to reduce fatalities and reduce collisions in general between automobiles and car and cyclists. And a key part of that, which goes to the heart of your question, is planning for cyclists. And if a city doesn't do any bicycle planning, cyclists just kind of figure out their routes as best they can. Quite frankly, a lot of times they ride on the same streets that they drive on because they think that that's the only way they know. But that's the worst thing you can do, because the streets that are best for driving on and get you to your destination fastest are the ones that handle the most cars at the highest rates of speed. And that's the most dangerous environment to put yourself in as a cyclist. So you would be better served by thinking, how do I go in my car? And then not taking that route and figuring out a parallel route through residential neighborhoods on side streets with lower volumes and lower speeds. But the city, you know, by doing a master bicycle plan, identifies those routes that they want to improve and invest in, and that makes them more attractive. It gets the cyclists off of the busier, higher volume roads, and they create corridors that allow people to move from one side of the city to the other in a safe fashion. And that's what good planners do, and that's what good leaders do, is create options and freedom for people to move around, and they'll reduce congestion, they'll reduce air pollution, they will have a healthier, more physically fit society in the process.
Hi everybody, I'm Archie Bell of the Trails of Houston, Texas. We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want. In Houston, we've just started a new dance called the Tighten Up. This is the music we tighten up with. First, tighten up on the drum. Come on now, drummer. I want you to tighten it up for me now. Oh, yeah. Tighten up on that bass now. Tighten it up. Yeah. Now let that guitar fall in.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the executive director of Bike Houston, Michael Payne. So, Michael, we were talking about the options that cities have in laying out their infrastructure for cyclists. In Houston, you recently have had quite a spate of biking fatalities. Maybe walk us through some of the anecdotes and how these could have been prevented.
People are studying cycling-related fatalities in greater and greater detail, and the what you see on a national level is that about 60% of the cycling fatalities are the result of an error made on the motorist perspective side, and some are, you know, 40%, maybe they say 20% are related to cyclists' errors, and another 20% are sort of not classified. But depending on, you know, how you look at that, you can come to your own conclusions. But let's just pause for a moment and say people engage in behaviors that result in collisions. And if you do a root cause analysis and you say, how do I drive this to zero? You know, you find a number of things that are important. One is that speed is a critical issue. A cyclist who's hit by a car going 20 miles an hour has a 80% chance of surviving, whereas a cyclist who is hit by a car going 40 miles per hour has only a 20% chance of surviving. So if you can find ways to cycle on slower roads, you should do that. That is the first thing. The second thing is that drivers are distracted these days, and Texas is a state that has not outlawed texting or talking on your cell phone with your hands while you're driving. And that means that we're putting vulnerable road users, not only cyclists, but also pedestrians and construction workers, in jeopardy, and school children for that matter. I mean, we've managed to outlaw it right around schools, but we haven't gone beyond that for some reason. I'm not sure why these other vulnerable road users are less significant than school children, but apparently our governor seems to think they are. So twice the legislation has made it to the governor, and twice Rick Perry has vetoed that legislation.
It's all about freedom, Michael. Sorry.
It is, right. So that's an issue. Pick your slow roads. The third point that's maybe worth making is alcohol. So I saw some statistics recently that 35% of cyclist fatalities, either the cyclist or the motorist, was above the legal limit. So, you know, it just because you're riding your bicycle doesn't mean it's okay to go and drink in excess. And if you do that, you're putting yourself at risk in the same way that motorists are putting themselves at risk. So that's a key issue. And maybe the fourth thing is people cycling without being very visible. So, you know, there's a segment of our society which commutes for work. They're often commuting at night home from their jobs, and they're unaware, whether they're unaware of the risks or they've just failed to take the precautions because they can't afford to or they don't have the time to. They're not wearing reflective material. They're not using lights on their bicycles, which is a law. And a lot of times they're riding on relatively busy roads. So that is a very, very dangerous situation to be in.
So Anise Parker is a pretty progressive mayor of Houston, working in a state run by Rick Perry and his ilk. But what kind of challenges do you think Mayor Parker and your colleagues will ultimately come up against when it comes to dealing as like kind of a little blue pocket within a bigger red landscape in Texas?
In terms of the challenges that we face, the big challenges, and we have made some good progress here in the last 90 days, I guess what I would say is that Bike Houston has come forward and has asked for the city to adopt our Goal Zero Fatalities campaign. We launched it in January. On March the 26th, Mayor Parker agreed and announced that she would be partnering with cyclists to implement Bike Houston's Goal Zero Fatalities campaign. That involves working on three really large issues. One is engineering and planning. The second is education. And the third is enforcement. And in terms of the engineering and planning, we have a new planning director who she's appointed, who is a cyclist and understands bicycle master plans. We hadn't done one in 20 years prior to now, and they have agreed to move forward with the bicycle master plan. So we're very encouraged by that decision and that announcement. Part of that bicycle master plan involves counting. Part of it involves designing the streets, as we were talking about earlier. The second thing that she has done is that she has launched a public service announcement supporting cyclists in terms of sharing the road and best practices and safe behavior for both motorists and cyclists. So we welcome that contribution on the issue of education. And then she's also engaged the chief of police in the Houston Police Department to enforce the laws relating to bicycling safety. And that means both for cyclists as well as for motorists, to look more closely at what can be done to reduce collision, so that they're writing tickets for cyclists who run traffic lights, but they're also doing things like putting police officers undercover in plain clothes on a bicycle by themselves riding on the road to see how close the cars pass the cyclist. So we have what's called a 3-foot safe passing ordinance here, which was put into place last year. And that just means the motorist needs to give 3 feet or more to the cyclist as they pass, and they're writing tickets on that. And that goes a long way.
It's like a biking sting operation, if you will.
It is a biking sting operation. That is exactly what it is. So, those are the sort of changes that we need to see. And those are, we've achieved all within the last, 120 days or so since we began working on them, since I've been working on them. In terms of the challenges that we face, I think the real hard part of the work will be as we get the master bicycle plan back. That identifies the priorities for investment for the city. And then we'll be faced with decisions around, what do we do with this? How much capital can we put into improving bicycle infrastructure given the challenges of maintaining our roads? So Houston is 600 square miles. We have something like 16,000 road miles of lanes across the city, and maintaining that is a huge financial burden for the city. And of course, getting people out of their cars onto the bicycles goes a long way towards reducing the usage, but initially we'll have both, and that's an issue. So capital improvements will be a big challenge.
Well, it's terrific work that you're doing, and it's always great to have you on the show and check in. People should go to bikehouston.org to learn more about your organization's efforts. Michael Payne, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, it's always a great pleasure. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the Grey Boy All-Stars, Hot Rise, and Archie Bell and the Drells. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidioedu.org. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.